will and our life over to the care of God as we understood him. And the spiritual principle is faith. So if we just reflect on what we've been told so far, we've been told that we're going to be shown precisely how to recover. That was in the doctor's opinion. We've been told that we will be shown specifically what others have done to recover, page 20. We're told that we will be given clear-cut instructions on page 29. And I was told to watch out for the word if, because when there's an if in the big book, an action for me usually follows. So now we're told on page 58, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path, unless I do not completely give myself to this simple program. And for me, it was really fundamental to get step one, because in getting step one, in really, really understanding to my core, my powerlessness and unmanageability, that desperation of step one, I am going to kill myself with food if I don't recover. That's what propelled me to take the action to work the rest of the steps. Because, you know, when you look at the work we have to do, you know, maybe people do kind of come willingly to the table and hop, skip and jump into step four and step five and six and seven. I don't know. I was not one of those people, because I, you know, I thought I'd done pretty well in kind of writing an inventory in step four. And then I had to actually tell somebody about it. My God, that felt absolutely horrendous. So, you know, unless I truly, truly get the desperation of step one for me, then I am not going to want to do the rest of this work. And the other thing that is really important is that when I make that step three decision, I have to take action. Otherwise, it's not going to have any effect. So a decision without an action is complacency. So if I don't continue with the rest of the steps, once I've made the step three decision, it's not going to be long lasting. It's not going to be permanent. And the first paragraph, and again, if you're ever working with somebody who's struggling, I think this is a really, really good paragraph to kind of go through word by word, because it focuses on honesty. You know, the word honest or honesty is mentioned a number of times. You know, do I accept to my core that I am a compulsive overeater? Do I still think that I've got some idea of something else that I want to try, that I'm not really a true compulsive overeater? You know, have I decided that I want to recover, and am I willing to go to any lengths to get it? And what does that look like for me? Because this is a program of really hard work, continuous hard work, continuous focus and commitment, continuous seeking. As Cindy was talking about, we can't rest on our laurels. And it says on page 58, you know, at some of these ideas, you know, we balked. We thought we could find an easier, softer way, but we could not. With all the earnestness at our command, we beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. Some of us tried to hold on to our old ideas, and the result was nil until we let go absolutely. And I think I missed that the first time round through the steps. It's not saying, well, the result will be 50%. It's saying the result will be nil until we let go absolutely. So one of the questions that you might want to consider is, what old ideas am I holding on to? And am I willing to let them go for a new experience? And I still ask myself that question today, because I can still have lots and lots of old ideas that I am holding on to. And it also tells us on page 58 that we need to remember that we deal with alcohol, with food, cunning, baffling and powerful. Without help, it is too much for us, but there is one who has all power, and that one is God. May you find him now. And I was told that as addicts, we rarely visit the now. We are either in we're either in the past, sat in a resentment, or I'm in fear, sat in the future. And my higher power can only be in the here and now. And my ego absolutely hates the present, because it's nothing to do. When I'm in the present and I'm with God, my ego is redundant. And that's one of the reasons why meditation is so hard, because it's really difficult for me as an addict to be in the present moment. And I've just noticed that that is actually from page 59, not page 58. So if you can just amend that. And then again, we've been told that we have to let go of our old ideas. On page 59, we're also reminded that half measures avail us nothing. We stood at the turning point. We asked his protection and care with complete abandon. So half measures give me nothing. You know, in program, 50% effort doesn't give me 50% results. I might like to think it does, but it doesn't. It says half measures are going to give me nothing. And I'm reminded in this section that, you know, my God, my higher power is going to protect me and care for me. I don't need to question the program. I can stop analyzing it. You know, aerodynamically, a bee should not be able to fly, but it does. So just accept the program will work for me if I follow the instructions. You know, am I going to carry on chasing food, or am I going to carry on chasing recovery? And step one showed me that I'm pretty useless at managing my life. So I'm going to fire Gail and I'm going to hire God to manage my life. And I'm not management. I don't need to know the plan. You know, I was a manager in my work life and I needed to know the plan. But actually in recovery, I don't need to know the plan. I just need to invite God every morning into my life to manage my life because I can't do it. And then on page 60, it talks about many of us exclaimed, what an order. I can't go through with it. Don't be discouraged. No one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. We are not saints. The point is that we're willing to grow along spiritual lines. The principles we have set down are guides to progress. We claim spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. And again, I just love that, because what that's saying to me is I'm going to be a work in progress for the rest of my life because I'm not going to be able to live a perfect spiritual life. However, I'm going to be given lots of tools and processes to enable me to grow spiritually, especially when I get to steps 10 and 11. So by this point in the book, in step three, it's saying that we need to be convinced of the three pertinent ideas that are listed on page 60. That I am a compulsive overeater and I cannot manage my own life. That probably no human power could have relieved my compulsive overeating, but that God could and would if he were sought. So what has convinced us at this point? Well, reading about steps one and step two in the book, the first 57 pages plus the doctor's opinion, the stories at the back of the book before and after a spiritual awakening, and our own experience. That's all the information that we've been exposed to that should have convinced us of the ABCs. And if we are convinced of those three things, then we are at step three. And if we're not, then I need to go back to step one. Because if I'm convinced of steps one and two, which is the essence of the ABCs, then there's nothing left. There is no alternative. The only solution is a spiritual awakening, and that's only accessible if I stop playing God. And the book now moves into showing us why me in self is the problem. And I say me in self because I had a lifetime of beating myself up about not being good enough, about not doing this right, about not doing that right. And I hear a lot in program that I am the problem, and that can make me beat myself up even more. The problem is when I'm in self, that is when I am the problem. When I'm with God, I am not the problem. So what the book is going to show me is what life looks like when Gail's trying to run the show. And I identify with everything that is written here. So on page 60, it says, being convinced, which is that we decided to turn our will and our life over to the care of God as we understood him. Just what do we mean by that? And just what do we have to do? And again, I don't need to figure this out because I'm going to be told what to do. I'm going to be given a set of instructions. And at this point, my ego is still fully intact. So all I'm really doing is making a decision to work the rest of the steps. You know, step three is asking me to make a commitment. I don't need to know how I'll do it yet, but the commitment is to get rid of self. And I make this commitment as I've seen that a life based on self is not going to work. And I'm unlikely to turn to a power until I'm convinced my power will not get the job done. And that is absolutely where I was at step three. I knew that Gail's power was no match for the food, and Gail's power could not sort my unmanageable life out. The only power that was going to do that was a power greater than myself. And, you know, the first time through the steps, I got myself really tied up into, well, what does step three mean? You know, how do I hand my will over? And I don't need to figure that out. I'm essentially just making a decision to continue with the rest of the steps. And one of the things that somebody pointed out to me is if we look at, there's many definitions of the word care, but one of the definitions is the provision of what is necessary for the health, welfare, maintenance, or protection of someone. Serious attention or consideration applied to doing something correctly or to avoid damage and risk. So I'm not handing myself over to a punitive higher power. I'm handing myself over to a power that is going to care for me. And why is that important? Well, because I can't care for myself. So then we start to get an insight into what does this look like? What does Gail in self look like? And they use the analogy of an actor. So on page 60, it talks about the first requirement is that we could be convinced that any life run on self-will can hardly be a success. And through the analogy of the actor, and I am just that, an actor, but I'm behaving as though I am the director. So imagine how the other actors feel if I start telling them how to play their part, and imagine how the director feels, but that's how I behave in real life. These paragraphs describe what I'm like when I am in self-will. I am the actor playing a role who's following a script given to me by the director, which is God. So if I'm an actor in a Shakespeare play and I start to improvise, it's no longer going to be a Shakespeare play because I'm deciding to make it up as I go along, and I'm changing the words, and I want you to say these lines, and I want you to stand over here, and I want the lights to look like this. And in this paragraph, I start to see how I try to control everything and everybody. I think I know what's best for me, and I think I know what's best for you. I start to control everything and everybody, and I think I know what's best for me and for you. And if you do it my way, not only will I be happy, but you'll be happy. And control is the only toolkit that I have. And even when my motives are good, an example for me would be wanting my children to be safe and happy. That's a really good motive. But I have a script for their life in terms of how I think they need to be and what they need to do in order for them to be happy. And that's just another form of me trying to control. And at step three, when I've exhausted all my options, I am able to surrender and just go, do you know what? I have no idea what my children's lives look like. I have absolutely no idea what my life should look like. I often have this conversation with sponsees when they start to sponsor, because there's often a level of fear that they need to know how somebody else's life should look like. Well, we don't. The only person who knows what my life should be like is my higher power. So, you know, a really good question for me was, you know, am I running on the power of me? Or am I running on the power of God? And there is an absolute difference between those two things. Because if I'm trying to control because I think I need you to behave in a certain way so that I feel safe, then I am acting on the power of me. So what usually happens? Well, you've probably been on the receiving end of somebody trying to control you. Things don't go very well, essentially. So we try even harder to control. So I try even harder to get the person to do what I want them to do. I try to control even more. And that is my delusion. You know, if I just try harder, you'll do what I want you to do, and then I'll feel okay. So the paragraph on page 61, where it says what usually happens, well, the show doesn't come off very well. You know, I begin to think that life doesn't treat me right. So I decide to exert myself even more. And on the next occasion, I become even more demanding, or sometimes I'm really gracious in order to get my own way. And I might see that I'm a bit at fault, but I'm sure that it's your fault, really. I'm just a little bit to blame. It's your fault. So then I become angry, indignant, self-pitying. And, you know, what's my problem? You know, am I not just a victim thinking that if I try harder, then I will be happy? And that is showing me that, you know, the harder I try to get the person to do what I want, the more likely they are to not want to do it. You know, just think about how it feels if you're on the end of somebody trying to control you. And that's a really good paragraph, the one that I've just read, to use as a benchmark, because that is what life's like when I'm in Gail's power. So use that as a benchmark. Am I in Gail's power or am I in God's power? So on page 62, it talks about selfishness and self-centeredness being the root of our problems. And, you know, these are really, really strong words being used here. It talks about, you know, selfishness and self-centeredness being the root of Gail's trouble, driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking and self-pity. I step on the toes of my fellows and retaliate. So no wonder people are annoyed with me and fed up with me, because that's what I do. You know, it's not food that's the root of my problem. It's the selfishness that is the root of my problem. And again, I had some trouble with the word selfish, because I used to think, you know, well, I do lots for other people. You know, I was in a profession that was about serving other people. And then somebody said to me, well, okay, if you're struggling with the word selfishness, what about self-obsessed? Do you think about yourself all the time? I was like, oh yeah. Yeah, I can absolutely go with that. I am all I think about, you know, and I'm driven by this fear because I usually think that I need something to be okay, or I'm going to lose something and then I'm not going to be okay. And I'm only thinking about me if I'm thinking about you. And it's usually because, well, what are you thinking about me? Or why are you behaving like that towards me? And if I am the problem when I'm in self, then that's great news, because I can change. Because if it was due to somebody else, then that's really bad news, because I'm not going to be able to change. And again, on page 62, it reminds me that my troubles are of my own making, and they arise out of myself. And as a compulsive overeater, I'm an extreme example of self-will run riot, although I don't usually think so. I usually think I'm being kind and helpful. And it says, above everything, Gail must be rid of this selfishness. She must, or it will kill her. God makes that possible, and there often seems no way of entirely getting rid of self without his aid. And again, when I read that in the first person, it really personalizes it for me. And it's saying that I'm not going to be able to get rid of the selfishness on my own, but my higher power is going to make that possible. And how does that happen? Well, I'm given the instructions and God walks me through the steps, revealing the person that I'm always meant to be. And at the bottom of page 62, it says, this is the how and why of it. First of all, I had to quit playing God. So God is going to be in charge, not me. And why is that? Well, we've already seen in step one that I can't manage my own life. Step one shows me my powerlessness, and this propels me into step two, where I'm going to find that power. Life when I'm in charge is unmanageable, and this propels me to step three, where I'm going to learn a new way of living. I'm going to swap my will for God's will. And then again, another wonderful promise at the top of page 63. It says that when I sincerely take this position, what is the position? Well, the position is that I'm going to let God run my life and I'm going to get out of the way. I'm told when I do this, all sorts of remarkable things happen. I know me playing God doesn't work, but when God's in charge, God is going to give me what I need. And we've referenced this paragraph last week and already this week. So just a reminder, what this paragraph is saying is that when God is in charge, when God is my employer, God has all power, God is going to provide what I need this abundant life of recovery, if I keep close to God by working the steps and then living in 10 and 11 and performing God's work well, which is step 12. And the peace that comes from stepping away from trying to manage the universe is amazing. And I just think that paragraph describes such incredible promises. But that doesn't mean that I stay there all the time, of course, because it doesn't, because I'm a human being and I'll never rise above the level of being human. But that is my absolute experience. So if we understand all of that, we've seen our powerlessness and our unmanageability in step one. We know that we need to seek this power, and we're at the point of making a decision, because we know when I'm in charge, life is never going to be good because I don't have the power. Then I'm at step three. And so far, I've just had 3 pages of seeing what self-will looks like, the last 3 pages that we've just alluded to. So step three is really just a decision. But by the time I get to step seven, when I've done my inventory, I've seen lots of examples of myself and my behavior through steps 4 to 7. So at step seven, that is the true handing over of my whole self to my higher power. And I don't just take step three once, it's a daily discipline, because my ego rebuilds itself. And I don't know whether this is your experience or whether I'm just incredibly strange, but often I feel like there's been meetings in my head overnight and I wake up in self, and before I've even interacted with anybody, I can be having a full-blown discussion in my head before my first cup of tea. You know, my negative Nora voice, I've also got a petty Betty voice. She tells me all sorts of things. You know, she'll tell me I'm useless, my recovery isn't good enough, you don't like me, you know, that was a stupid thing to do. She literally invades my mind with constant critical chatter. And once I become aware of it, I turn to steps 1, 2, and 3. And I observe the unmanageability of my thought life. And I say to my higher power, I am powerless over this thinking. And I know you will restore me to sanity. Will you help me, please? Just as simple as that. And I consciously shift my thinking away from that negativity and flood myself with my higher power's love and peace. And I have to stay with the step 1, 2, 3 process throughout the day. You know, again, I'll just find myself putting my hand in my heart space and just saying, you know, I'm powerless. My life's unmanageable. I can't do this. Can you help me? And it's just, it's like focusing on seeing white cars all day. If that's what I'm doing, then I'm going to miss all the blue ones, because my thoughts influence my reality. So if I'm in this kind of negative chatter in my head, that's what I'm going to see all day, because I've got this constant negative voice in my head. And I think it doesn't matter how we say the step three prayer, so long as we say it, whatever word you want to use. But it was pointed out to me that the step three prayer says, relieve me of the bondage of self. It doesn't say, relieve me of my bondage. So me in self is the problem. So me, the authentic me, that's what God reveals as I work these steps. God shows me who I should be when I'm separated from self. But when I'm in self, my identity, how I show up in self, this is what changes. And I move from being completely self-obsessed to focusing on the other, on other people. So me is not the problem. Self is the problem. And I frequently ask myself during the day, am I running on the power of me, or am I running on the power of God? And they are two very, very different experiences. So before we just consider the questions, there's just a couple of questions on step three that I think are kind of helpful. Again, there's just a couple of readings that just are practical examples of what we've just been talking about. And the first one is on page 120, and it's actually in the paragraph. It's just a short one, so I'll read this. It's actually in the chapter to wives. And it's down at the bottom of page 120. And it says that God has either removed your husband's liquor problem or he has not. If not, it had better be found out right away. Then you and your husband can get right down to fundamentals. If a repetition is to be prevented, it's talking about relapse, then place the problem along with everything else in God's hands. And that just really speaks to me, because that's what it's saying. God is the answer to everything and for everything. And I just think that is just a really lovely reminder that if we put everything in God's hands, we are going to be okay. And then the second reading is on page 143, and it's the second paragraph down. And again, it's talking about, if your man accepts your offer, it should be pointed out that physical treatment is but a small part of the picture. Though you are providing him with the best possible medical attention, he should understand that he must undergo a change of heart. To get over drinking, to get over compulsive overeating, will require a transformation of thought and attitude. We all had to place recovery above everything, for without recovery, we would have lost both home and business. So that is telling me that my recovery has to be the most important thing in my life, because if I haven't got that, then I haven't got anything, because without my recovery, I can't manage my life. I can't live my life. And then the last reading before we move on to the questions is on page 541. It's one of the out of one of the stories at the back of the big book. So would somebody like to read that for us? Susan. So it's page 541, and it's the paragraph, the first full paragraph that starts the third step. If you just read that paragraph, thank you.
The third step was the most difficult for me, but having completed it, I found I could face or untangle the other steps if and when I could remember to relax, trust the program, and implement the step rather than fight it. Accepting my higher power did not fully change my attitude of resistance. It just made yielding to instruction a more rational and acceptable mode of behavior. For each step, I still had to go through the process of recognizing that I had no control over my drinking. I had to understand that the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous had helped others and could help me. I had to realize that if I did want sobriety, I had better do the steps whether I liked them or not. Every time I ran into trouble, I ultimately found that I was resisting change.
Thank you, Susan. And again, I think that's just a real reminder that, you know, we don't always come hop, skipping and jumping to the table. You know, sometimes we don't necessarily want to do certain steps, or we don't want to put the work in. But actually, the benefits when we do that are just absolutely enormous. Okay, so just before we have our break, let's just take a couple of minutes. There's just a couple of questions, probably the first three, because the last two are in relation to kind of, you know, am I willing to do step four and proceed with the rest of the steps? So if you just take a couple of minutes just to jot some bullet points down like we did last time about the first three questions, and then if you would share your experience, strength and hope with us, that would be absolutely wonderful. So just take a couple of minutes to do that. Thank you.